This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
All right, Place to Be Nation universe. We are back after a show off for vacation reasons. And it was time for the Money in the Bank reaction show. I'm your host, Chris Zellner. Joined as always by my co-host, the Oracle of WWE, Devin Hales. Devin, welcome back.
Thanks. Yeah, I was gone for the first half of June, and now I am back in the saddle. As Chris mentioned, when I got on line with him a few minutes ago. And, I got caught up with all the Raws and SmackDowns I missed, the two Raws and SmackDowns I missed from about 12:30 to about 6:30 this afternoon, and then went right into Money in the Bank. So
10 hours straight of Sunday. Yeah, 10 hours straight of WWE. 10 plus hours straight of WWE, actually. So, that's awesome. You got the full like you cram for a major exam here, you know, ready for this.
That's right.
So, and this show kind of felt like an exam at times for various reasons. So we'll go ahead and get started with the pre-show. Now, before I talk about the pre-show match, the panel this time was Renee, Sam Roberts, and Booker T, which, of course, Booker T's been on Raw as the announcer, and while David Otunga's been filming his movie. And Booker T tonight, he was pretty on fire throughout this whole pre-show. I don't know what got into him, but he was bringing the hot takes and cutting strong promos. And what did you think of Booker on the pre-show tonight?
Well, I've always been a fan of Booker, and I don't always pay full attention to the pre-show until the match comes on, because guys like Sam Roberts drive me insane. But Booker was throwing out stuff like the Fantastics and the Rock and Roll Express and stuff like that. I think I heard him reference those guys at one point. So, yeah, he seemed to be extra energetic tonight.
Yeah, he was very passionate. I think Naomi got his goat as old expression would say early on, by threatening to snatch his wig. And he was on fire after that, giving Sam Roberts a whole bunch of shit. So I thought that was pretty funny. But one of the more interesting panels they've had on the pre-show recently. So that was good, because sometimes those things can be complete bores. But solid showing from Booker T tonight. And then we have a pre-show match here as the Hype Bros reunite after Zack Ryder was cleared to return to action last week, facing the Colognes. And I know a lot of people online on Twitter were thinking, okay, somebody's going to turn here, either Zack or Mojo. And Zack was seen by the logical choice, but nope, straight match. Hype Bros look good. Colognes did pretty good. It was a fine match. Hype Bros won. Right result. What'd you think?
Yeah. I thought there was a possibility of Ryder turning as well, because I know there was the social media stuff going on that was talked about a few weeks ago. But yeah, it was a fine opener. I'm a fan of the Hype Bros, so I was glad to see them back. I'm a fan of Zack Ryder. He works hard. And one thing I want to point out is WWE is really at almost full strength across the board when it comes to a healthy roster at this point. You know, the only guy who really needs to come back to complete that is Braun, and he's rumored to be back pretty soon. It's nice to see Zack Ryder back and to fill out the roster. It's a pretty healthy roster right now.
Now, they're playing off the deal where they won that number one contender match and Zach got hurt. And then we had the tag match tonight, which looks like it's the beginning of something. So what do you think's going to happen? You think they may wait and do the turn after they get a shot at the titles and something might happen there? Or, I mean, how long do you think they're going to drag it out before there is a turn?
I think you could probably, I think they'll probably get a tag title shot before the turn, you know, next month or two. The Usos New Day feud isn't over yet, and we'll get to that here in a few minutes, but I can definitely see, you know, an Usos Hype Bros tag title match on SmackDown Live, Mojo taking the fall, or Ryder taking the fall, or however you want to do it. And then my guess would Ryder would get, you know, frustrated and turn on Mojo. They may not turn at all. You know, that's always a possibility.
Oh, yeah.
It might be in some ways better if there is no turn, because the Hype Bros might have a better chance to get on TV if they're a tag team, because we've talked about this before, Chris. SmackDown did a poor job of rotating on SmackDown.
We saw that tonight, too. I will talk about more about that later as well.
Yes, definitely. So, you know, it might be better if they stay as a tag team.
Yeah. There's arguments for and arguments against, definitely. But it seems like Mojo, there was a little momentum going with him. Not much. You know, he had the gender match, which he lost, which he should have lost. But there was a story there that was told, and it seems like they're just abandoning that story right now, which maybe it'll come back later on. But and it's no fault of Mojo or anybody else. You know, Zach was ready to come back, so you know you kind of want to tie up loose ends. But I don't know. I guess maybe the worst timing for that to happen was this time, for sure. Because I mean, Mojo went like many weeks without even being on television after he won the Andre. You know, that's so I don't know. We'll see what happens, but they got the win here. So the Colognes, not a good look for them tonight. All right, let's start with the main show here, and we have the Women's Money in the Bank leading off, which whenever there's two, they usually like to lead off with one and close with one. Women got it tonight, and we had Carmella, Charlotte, Tamina, Becky, and Natalya. Interesting to me that the intros, they had the both baby faces come out first. I would have thought they would have had one of the baby faces come out last, you know, to keep the heat. But then they did that video after the intros, which I thought was odd. You know, so it had the girls just standing around in the ring waiting for that video.
That is weird. It's a great video.
Yeah, the video's really, really good. Yes.
It's weird. You know, I recall them doing that before several times. I remember, you know, like at WrestleMania 18, the opener, Jericho and Regal, they did the video after they came out. Or like during the entrances or something. I just remember seeing that because we picked it on VHS and kept it for years and rewatched it. And I always thought it was weird that they did that after they came out. But they do that from time to time. I don't know why they do that. It's weird.
Yeah, it's just and for a singles match, okay, I could kind of, you know, see that. This when you got like five women just standing around the ring doing nothing, you know, it's kind of. Especially in a Money in the Bank situation. Yeah, it is kind of odd. But anyway, just a little thing I noticed. All right, the match goes on here. And, I mean, this is the first Women's Money in the Bank ladder match. They did some interesting things. Charlotte stole Alexa Bliss's Twisted Bliss on the floor, which Alexa wasn't too happy about on Twitter. Lots of stuff with Tamina. She was very prominent in this match, which was kind of a surprise. She got a lot of offense. They got the heat on her a good little bit. I thought that was interesting. And it seemed like the match was starting to do something. And then we get the finish, which, of course, James Ellsworth climbs the ladder, gets the briefcase, drops it to Carmella. Big controversy on the floor. But as was noted, this is a no DQ match. So there's no rules. Ellsworth could do it. And we've had a situation like this almost had before with Maurice and Ted DiBiase Jr. years ago.
Yes, yep.
But Ellsworth did it, and that was the finish of the match. Lots of people were upset for various reasons. I know a lot of sentiment about how, you know, this was supposed to be a big deal for the women empowerment, and a man had to go get the ladder for a woman, which I can understand that sentiment. And then you get the sentiment of, well, Carmella's not over, and Ellsworth, you know, is getting the heat off of him, which, you know, none of the heels in that match were over. That's just the fact. They're just not.
Right.
And my thing about the match is I thought the match was going okay. There was some good stuff going on. But like I said, it just felt like the ending came at the wrong time. There needed to be some better build-up. I guess maybe more false finishes, more stuff like that. Something more. It was missing some more meat. That's what I thought. I mean, other than that, I thought it was okay. It's fine for what it was. So, what did you think about it?
It was okay. I think I was pleasantly surprised. I was concerned because there is some inexperience here, especially with somebody like Carmella or someone like Mia, who isn't necessarily inexperienced but has never been a good wrestler, being in a ladder match environment. That scared me coming in. But
there was some slippiness involving those two as well.
Oh, absolutely.
The spot I loved was when Charlotte kicked, air quotes, Carmella, and she took the big bump for a whiff, which I thought was interesting. But yeah, there was some sloppiness and kind of some stiffness going on from Tamina's side of things.
Yeah. It was, but I actually didn't. It was more than I thought it was going to be, especially between those two. I thought it was very interesting, like you noted, that Tamina took and ate a lot of it. I kind of want to tread lightly because I don't want to sound, you know, like I'm being an asshole here. Maybe because she was the bigger woman in the match, she maybe is seen as more durable. Although Tamina's not a durable person, and since I mean,
no, she's had knee problems. Yeah, she's had knee problems. And
she took that spear, Chris, and God. She fell over and you bumped with her knees.
Yes, she's had multiple knee surgeries, and there were a couple of spots, you know, during that whole thing where they're like, oh shit, she's about to fuck her knee up again.
Yeah, yeah. Especially she was that bumping. Spear spot from Charlotte on the floor the stairs.
Yes.
And I don't know if, like, I just thought it was interesting that she was the one. I think it's probably more that they see her as a sort of a veteran because she's been there longer. Although Natty's been there longer than she has.
Yes, so, Natalya was like almost non-existent in this match.
Yeah,
really.
You know, you think Natty would take those spots, but Tamina was they chose, and I wonder if it was because of her size and her outfit is. You know, she's not going to get as bruised and as battered as everybody else is. But I don't know. But I was surprised that she was the choice to take those bumps. But then, you know, everybody took big bumps in the match.
Not as wild as it could have been, which I kind of understand.
Yes.
Because of what you're going to have that match come back again later on the show. And you kind of don't want to do too much in the first match, which has been a problem on some of these shows, the Money in the Bank shows, where the first match on the show, they do all this wild, crazy stuff. And then by the time when they come for the second match, it's like, well, we've already seen these wild spots. So I kind of understand that. But again, like I said, I just felt like I wanted more.
I think they should have had more teases. I think it's less about the spots. I think it's more about the drama and the teases.
The drama. Absolutely.
I was concerned about the spots because of some of the inexperience and the fact that some of these ladies can be sloppy. And they proved to be wrong and proved to be, you know, like we said, there was some sloppiness, but it was, for the most part, it looked like, you know, any ladder match you could see as far as the bumps are. But we only had maybe one or two teases, like when Charlotte and was it Charlotte and Tamina who took the big bump when they were brawling on top and got pissed off?
Yes.
And so we only got one, maybe one other tease after that. You know, and we got like a million teases in the main event, which we'll get to. But you know, like we didn't get enough teases. And as far as the finish goes, I'm more in line with the okay, great, the person with a penis on the match. And the thing is, I think my main problem is this is a huge match and it's a historic match, and you have it in that way. I'm not even sure. I actually had a thought that it could be meta booking, where WWE realizes that causes heat with like progressive fans.
I think that's what they were going for.
So I think that's what they were going for too. I think it's very possible, you know, that like so like because it did. Real heat, you know, the finish did piss the fans off. And people did make strong arguments on Twitter that Ellsworth has always helped Carmelo win her matches.
And they've gotten together. And he's,
this makes sense.
He's for, more for over my, than any of them.
Yes. Yep. Yep. And this makes sense from consistency and character consistency, Sorry. Slurring my words there. I'm less angry now as the night's gone because I've seen some good arguments for it, but I still think that it's because of the import as far as the historic nature of the match. I'm not a huge fan of basically a man winning the match.
Well, there's a way they could have done it that would have been better than what they did do. I have no problem with the gist of the finish, but they could have had Ellsworth, like, I mean, not him directly climbing the ladder, but like him fending off Becky or something like that, or making sure that Becky can't get the Carmella, and Carmella climbs the ladder herself and gets the briefcase.
Right.
I think that would have been a better finish. Yeah, the optics of that situation was not good.
Right.
You know, it's tough, especially considering that was the first of a kind. And there were some people unhappy on the Raw women's side tweeting about it. Nia Jax, Bayley. So, you know, who knows, you know, what's real and what's not. But right. I kind of think there may have been some legit stuff behind it, especially Nia Jax. She's pretty much a straight shooter a lot on Twitter. So.
Mm-hmm.
It's definitely going to lead to something because immediately Brian tweeted out that, you know, when he comes back on SmackDown Tuesday night, he's going to do something about this. Shane called an embarrassment. So as far as doing it for heel heat and trying to get
heat, it works.
But again, it could have been done better than what they did. So we'll see how they handle it on Tuesday night. And I honestly thought she was going to cash in tonight to really, you know, alleviate that problem and make it a harder thing for them to do. But we'll talk about that in a little bit, what happened. So we'll move on. And we had one of the participants of that women's championship match, Lana, do an interview with Dasha Fuentes. And this was not good. I don't know who to blame for this. But this just didn't work. Lana's got all this experience in acting and doing stuff. It seems like when she's trying to cut a promo for herself, She can be very inconsistent. She did, pretty good with Rusev, doing all the talking for him when they first got started, but I don't know. She just, I don't, she, it seemed like sometimes she didn't know what she was saying here. Well, I mean, what do you think about her work as a solo character so far?
I mean, it doesn't really interest me at all. I get annoyed with her because her fake Russian accent goes in and out,
Well, it's so
and
ridiculous to watch it,
it's
but
like
total
why
divas.
can't we? Well, I know it's like why can't we just have CJ Perry play Lana and like speak in her regular voice?
Exactly.
So, like I mean, like you can explain away the thick Russian BS. Like this, like why I don't know. It's just like
Well,
that's my biggest thing with it.
everybody that watches Total Divas knows the story about how she was an American that lived in Russia, and they could tell that story on television.
Yes. Yep.
They really can. I mean, she in legitimate dance, all that stuff. I mean, she that's all what that's all part of the story. But
She's
no.
one of those. She's one of those Florida State girls too.
Oh yeah.
That old Brent
Brent Musburger, God bless
famously.
him. Yeah, Jen Sturger and Lana and a couple other females that Brent Musburger was lusting over, and then Brett Favre and Jen Sturger had that little situation where he was
Oh
texting
yeah.
pictures of his cock to her. But yeah, this I don't know about this one. We'll see how she does from now on. But yeah, this was not the best of segments. All right, we move on to the Usos defending the SmackDown tag titles against the New Day. Big E and Kofi here with Xavier on the floor. Started out kind of and then it really picked up later on. Lots of crazy stuff. Big E doing this dive. Kofi did his own version of the Darby Allin coffin drop with a twist to it. And he is a very trusting man because I don't know if I could have trusted the Usos to catch me from that high in the air like that because, oh Lord, that could have been a disaster. But he made it work. They were picking it up and it was starting to get some heat going on. And until there was a botched spot that could have really wrecked the whole thing. And they kind of come back from it where I forget Jimmy. Was it Jimmy Uso on the top rope that Big E tried that caught in midair?
Yeah, that's a really hard spot to do. Those Usos boys are big too.
Yeah. So yeah, he's on top rope. Big E catch trying to catch me into the big ending, and he loses him,
Yep.
and he drops him to the mat gently, then picks him back up. And they eventually keep going and then do the finish and what happens and the other Uso pulled Jimmy out of the ring and then we get the walk out finish count out
Yeah.
finish which I in this feud being their first match on pay-per-view I have no problem with but coming off the previous match.
Yes.
Not the best of looks for a live crowd, so it kind of really put a damper on the whole thing for me. What'd you think?
Yeah, I thought this match was really good. New Day and Usos have had really good matches before. I think both are really good teams. Both teams, whenever they go pay-per-view, they usually always, a 3 hour plus match. The Usos are one of maybe the best tag team in WWE today, putting together a finishing run, a hot finishing run. They're excellent at that. A lot of crazy spots. Big E did his apron, his crazy spear to the floor. Kofi took an insane bump to the floor
Oh
to set up
yes.
the
Oh.
I think he fell on his head.
Yes. I was like, man, this dude's gonna concuss himself here, and he didn't do it.
yeah, so it was a really, really, really good match, and they had several good false finishes. The thing with the big ending, trying to catch him on the big ending, those spots, sometimes they don't bother me, sometimes they do. Like, this, I'm kind of in between on, but I do wish that people would just drop it, try counts. The is, it's, I mean, it's pretty much lost nowadays in wrestling, in a lot of ways, but I people would, when a spot goes wrong, do something else. But I mean,
it's that Sabu just, mentality.
Yeah.
Gotta keep doing it.
Yep.
Gotta break that table.
But yeah, I thought this match was really good, and I'm completely with you. You know, a walkout finish isn't bad, out of context, but in context of this pay-per-view and this show, it sucked because we just had to deal with a finish in the Women's Money in the Bank match. So it was frustrating to see that two times in a row, and I'm sure it frustrated the live crowd as well.
Yeah. It was, again, it kind of took some steam out of the crowd because the crowd really got into what was going on at the finish, and then boom. And I could understand a live crowd being upset with something like that, but sometimes you got to look at it in a logical way, too. It's like, well, this is the first match. There's going to be more matches down the line, so it's building a, you know, building a story up for future matches, but that St. Louis crowd don't care. They're in St. Louis, you know.
Yeah.
They're not. They're not going to be at the next show. They may watch it, but they're not going to be there. Which you can't look at that these days in the way you do these shows because, yeah, it's, you know, it may suffer for the fans in that city, but you got to tell the long term story.
Yeah.
So I mean, I guess. Also, another thing, too, that, you know, I brought up on Twitter to somebody, or I think I brought it up, was in the days of the network where everything costs the same, you have way more leeway to do something like this.
Sure.
Other than doing it on a card that you're charging $50 and $60 for.
That's why I always recognize that people who complain about, you know, these monthly pay-per-views, especially these bi-monthly bi-weekly, I guess, now because of the brand split being like just like enhanced versions of Raw or SmackDown. I mean, it makes sense.
That's what they are.
You know, like you're not going to get episode. You know, like the Big Four are going to be big shows.
Yes,
but you know the other shows in between are not going to be like that.
No, and this one's a little bit different because you got the gimmick
yeah,
match.
Right.
But still, it's not the same. It's definitely not the same what it used to be. So, they have more leeway in doing finishes like this than they would have if they were still charging $60, believe me. All right, they announced that Brian would be making a ruling on the whole Money in the Bank situation on SmackDown Tuesday. Then we get to see Bob Orton Jr. starting to slaughter, chatting it up in the back as, yes, they invited quite a few St. Louis-type legends to the show tonight to watch Randy Orton and Jinder Mahal, and we'll talk more about them when that match comes along. Next up, we have the Women's Championship match. Naomi defending against Lana. Lana has only had one match on the main roster, and really, I don't know if you really can count that. It was at WrestleMania last year, where she was in that multi-women tag match. Didn't do much. She's worked out in NXT. She's had a few matches on the house shows down there, not on television. She's been training, so she's had some ring time, but it was going to be interesting to see how she would work on the main roster in the show. And I thought she did pretty decent here, for considering. I did think it was interesting that they had Naomi kick out Alana's finish. That one-arm sit-out powerbomb deal that Lana just debuted. I thought that was interesting that they did that. But, it was okay. And then Carmella came out, and that started fueling everything up that people said, oh, she's going to cash it in, which she came out at the wrong time. It wasn't the right time to cash it in, and she teased and she was going to give the briefcase away, but then it's like, eh. And she watched Naomi eventually make the comeback on Lana and get her in the submission hold and make her tap out. Then Naomi and Carmella had a stare down afterwards before Carmella walked off. As a match itself, like I said, Lana did better than I thought she would. Did okay. Naomi couldn't really carry her. I thought it was just okay at best. What did you think?
The match was fine. It was inoffensive. I was not necessarily impressed with Lana, but I was impressed that she wasn't bad because I did think she would be pretty bad. She wasn't. She was confident, I think would be the word I'd use. I'd say she's better than Dana Brooke by far.
What about this comparison? Since this is who she's basically replacing on SmackDown, Eva Marie.
Oh, she's a better worker than Eva Marie is.
And I think part of that goes to that Lana actually has some athletic background.
Yes.
You know, in the dance, while Eva Marie was just a model.
Yep.
So that probably makes a big difference.
Yeah.
As well.
Yeah. You know, the match was fine. It wasn't. You know, there wasn't any great moment or really even bad moment. It was just kind of there. The third match in a row with sort of weird interference or weird, not, you know, like weird finish where something, unusual happens is kind of annoying. But again, there is that booking leeway, but it is frustrating to watch for me personally.
Well, at least there was a clean finish here.
Yes, that is true. The Carmella tease something that I'm assuming it's something that they'll continue to do with Carmella as far as the teasing like they always do, but maybe they'll have a gimmick where she I don't remember them ever doing the Money in the Bank gimmick where someone comes out and pretends like they're gonna tease, keeps joking around with it. So maybe that's what they'll do with her, which could be another kind of new interesting twist that they've never done with the Money in the Bank gimmick.
If she keeps it, because that's the whole thing about Tuesday.
Yeah,
that's what
true.
They're gonna do.
Yep. Very, 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 very true. That's a good point. But yeah, the match was fine. Naomi, she's used that Rings of Saturn, whatever it is, before, hasn't she?
Yeah.
I thought so. She beat, what is it? She beat Alexa with it?
Yes, yeah, I think so.
So that's, they've, pretty much everybody has like a basic finishing move and then a submission finish now. So
yeah, Lana kicked out of the rear view.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I forgot about that. That's true. Yeah, she did. I think the right person won. Lana getting her finisher kicked out of was an interesting thing, too. I don't know. I mean, is she going to start a program with Carmella? Is it going to be a heel versus heel thing? Is she going to still do Naomi? Like, Lana was clean in her first match, which I kind of like, and it makes sense because she's so inexperienced. But it'll be – I'm not sure what they're going to her. It kind of seemed like this was maybe the start of maybe a mini feud with Carmella, but it seemed like she's kind of out of the picture now after listening to Naomi. I don't know.
Yeah, that's a weird thing because it's where do you go to next? Do you all just put her as like with Natalya and all them, like she's, you know, one of them, or you keep her on her own, or what do you do with her? That's going to be interesting to see how that goes. Regarding the whole Becky, the Carmella and Ellsworth deal, I kind of have an idea that I think that they're going to do something like they're going to make Becky and Ellsworth have a match against each other.
Well, you know, the, you know, it's, they've been teasing that match and even teasing it on social media and it for months. And that's kind of been like the kind of a joke, so like a somewhat of a real rumor for a long time is a Becky Jimmy Dream match. So that could be
for the briefcase. And that way, you know, he'll lose the briefcase and Carmella get pissed off at him.
Right.
I mean, that's a way of doing that.
And they can have that match on the big July 4th show, too.
Well, they could.
Because it looks like they might try to – I don't know how much of an idea is that July 4th show. But with Cena returning.
Yeah, who knows what they're going to do.
Yep.
I mean, it's definitely an option. So we'll see how everything goes with the women on Tuesday because they got a lot of unanswered questions. Well, another unanswered question we have here is who's been attacking Tyler Breeze? In this show, we had the debut of Fashion Vice. So they've gone from the Law and Order version of the Fashion Files to Fashion Noir, which I love, and the ode to the 40s and 50s movies, now to the 80s in Fashion Vice, where the opening scene is Fandango on an old school cell phone with the in tape written property of Paul Lee, which popped Paul Heyman on Twitter. He thought it was hilarious, which that was great. On the wall this week was another Michael Hayes wanted deal. Dusty Rose fashion icon. A picture of Arn Anderson in his shirt and tie with glasses that I can't remember who used as their Twitter avatar, but somebody does. And Blue Steel on there. But they get a VHS tape, as mentioned earlier in this show. And they watched it on one of those old little like TVs that had the VCR built in it. The little small TVs. And you get two guys in a black silhouette talking about
clearly the Ascension.
Yeah, they're wanting Fashion Vice in the ring. Yeah, clearly the Ascension. We're looking like they're doing basically the Black Scorpion promos from 1990. So I was hoping for like two masked men to be as the Black Scorpions. It makes sense because Ric Flair was unmasked as the Black Scorpion in St. Louis at Starrcade 90. So there you go. Yeah. It all could have played into the thing. But no, they didn't do that. They did have a confrontation later. So
then they did Michael Jackson puns at the end.
Oh, the Michael Jackson puns at the end was great. I love this team. Yeah, they do sometimes they do some wacky shit in the matches. But those guys have been really great together in these skits.
Oh, their vignettes are outstanding, and it's gotten them over with the crowd, and I bet it gets them over with the casual fans too, which is kind of the fan base that really is important, in a lot of ways. So you know, getting that character development is huge, and you know, I'm not a fan when they mix the serious wrestling with the extreme comedy, but they had that 8-man tag on SmackDown that was pretty good last week, where they didn't do anything goofy. So you know, when they work a straight tag, they're really good as a tag team too in the ring. And if they work a full comedy match, they're pretty good at that too. You know, the occasional time they've worked full comedy, the entire match has been fun. So you know, they're a very very talented team, and they have good delivery and their vignettes are always fun.
They're like another version of New Day. You know, they were, you know, banished pretty much for a while from television. You never saw them. And then all it took was them starting to do comedy stuff, and it got them over.
Yep.
So props to them, man, for finding a way to get on television and to get over. A lot of talent doesn't do that. These guys kept grinding it out, and they're, you know, they're finding their way. So props to them. All right, that was a great segment. I mean, let's look. The first hour of the show was kind of hit and miss. Now we get this the Fashion Vice segment. Next up, because maybe my favorite segment of the whole show. Now, there were rumors going around and actual visual evidence this morning of one Mike Bennett and Maria Kanellis at an airport in St. Louis. And everybody was like, oh, they're there. And Tom Phillips, Byron, and JBL were just talking up some spiel. And all of a sudden, this music hits. And my Lord have mercy, this is this may be the best entrance music in the WWE right now. As it's like a updated version of Power Ballad, and it's talking about the like glory of love and all this other stuff. And all of a sudden you see Mike and Maria. And they stand there, and Maria's doing the spiel, and she's cutting the promo about how she's back. She's finally found the partner she's been looking for. And then the lights raise on the Titantron, and it says Mike and Maria Kanellis. As Mike has taken her name in marriage, I went nuts for that. Because it is so awesome, because there have been guys in recent times that have been doing that, and this is making fun of that culture. And I thought Mike was great there as the weak husband, but the guy who definitely knows his place. Right. Kind of like he reminds me of like Kelly Ripa's husband. Yeah. There and Maria is Kelly Ripa. She's the definite dominant in that whole relationship. She's the boss. And that's Mike. So I think these two are gold with this gimmick. This type of gimmick couldn't really work with a lot of people. I think with these two is perfect. So I mean, what do you think about the debut of Mike and Maria here?
We've been hearing about the rumors of them coming back for a while, and there was a period where people didn't think it would be the case because of the Bella's and Maria heat. But that obviously didn't really matter, and so the rumors kept going, and basically this weekend, you know, with the battle at the airport and stuff, it like a guarantee, so everybody knew that they'd show up soon. And I love this. I pop for it big. I pop for the Maria and Mike Kanellis. I'm trying to find the word to describe, but they're like those couples that do what do you call them?
Motivational type speaking type stuff. Yeah. They're trying to, couples retreats.
Yeah.
Like they're the couple that's leading the retreat.
Yes.
Oh yeah.
These pretentious rich couple who lead like really weird, like, retreats. Yeah, that's definitely what they are. I'm excited to see where this goes. They'll be kind of the Miz and Maurice of SmackDown now, and with a different twist and gimmick. It'll be fun to watch them. I always enjoyed Maria in TNA. I wasn't a huge fan of Mike Bennett in TNA, but Maria was very good in TNA, I thought.
He might have been
at
like
least
a different
as a character.
I don't know if it was me, but might have been like a completely different person tonight than he did in TNA.
Yeah, yeah, yep.
I don't know. Now, of course, Ring of Honor, he, I don't know, he just looked different in TNA for some reason.
Yeah.
And he looked like old Mike Bennett, Ring of Honor Mike Bennett on this show tonight.
Yeah.
I mean, well, God knows, TNA can make you do some things, but. Man, I mean, he looked great, and Maria is bringing back like her first lady of wrestling type gimmick. So
yeah.
I could definitely see something down the line between these two and John and Nikki, where they can really play off some of that stuff. God, those promos would be something. So yeah, I'm all in on Mike and Maria.
Gosh, now Now I want to see a Mike and Maria versus Cena and Nick feud since Nikki and Maria probably hate each other. So
yeah, I'm all in on these two, and I like Mike Bennett anyway. I mean, yeah, TNA, not a big fan of that run.
Sure,
but I liked him in the Kingdom with Taven and Adam Cole and Maria. Of course, is great. I love that Carl Anderson had a great response to somebody tweeted to Carl that she was there at the show, and Carl was excited. Going back to their New Japan days, maybe they'll have some sort of interaction down the line. So yes, this baby is really picking up now with those two segments. So after about 30 minutes of no wrestling, we get the WWE Championship match. The modern day Maharaja, Jinder Mahal, defending against the hometown hero, Randy Orton. And they had the St. Louis Legends at ringside. They had Ric Flair, who wrestled many matches St. Louis as NWA champion, and even before that as Missouri State champion.
We're talking to you, Tanner.
Yeah, Tanner. Go send your shitty food take somewhere else. Then you got Bob Orton Jr., who, of course, from the area, worked many times in St. Louis. Baron Von Raschke, who was a headliner in St. Louis in the 70s. Larry D. X. Henning, who was a headliner in St. Louis in the 60s and the 70s. Sergeant Slaughter, who got his start and one of his first big pushes in Central States and worked St. Louis as Colonel Bob Slaughter in the 70s with a full head of hair. And he was there. And Greg Gagne, whose dad had points in the office back in the day with Sam Muchnick and Vern Gagne. And then they took over when Sam Muchnick retired. It was Vern, Bob Geigel, Pat O'Connor, Larry Matisick. You know, all these guys had points in the office. So Greg had plenty of experience working St. Louis. So it was pretty cool to see them have those guys at ringside, you know, watching the match and, you know, being in Randy's corner, basically, because Jinder has the Singh brothers. So I thought that was cool. What did you think about the Legends being there?
I thought it was really, really cool. It was the St. Louis crowd was really, really, really hot for this and really the entire match. I've seen Randy Orton matches in St. Louis where he isn't all that over, so I was pleased to see the heat for this match. But yeah, it was really cool to see. And our buddy Tanner on Twitter didn't know why Ric Flair was a legend in St. Louis.
Yeah, I saw that. I was like, you got to be kidding me. You got to be kidding me.
Yeah, and it was cool to see Bob Orton get a huge reaction
without his cast.
Yeah, yeah.
He didn't have his cast on, and he was rumored to be dead last week. Yeah, I was getting DMs days ago, and so I, have you heard about Bob Orton Jr.? He died. I was like, huh?
What?
And then Randy come on Twitter and said, my dad's alive. The rumors are not true.
Those
and,
DMs, y'all.
Well, this was coming from Facebook, and it had made its way to Twitter. And right. I tell you, I hate the false death stuff.
I know. It's stupid and offensive.
Yeah. Now, regarding the match here, one thing I got to say, Jinder Mahal's entrance is one of the best entrances they've ever done. I love Jinder Mahal's entrance. I love when the entrance way, you know, becomes the rug as it leads him down with a fire and all that stuff. I think that shit's cool as hell. He carries himself so not great as a champion. I mean, he has the look. I mean, he is like what a heel champion should look like. Is he the best worker? No, he's not the best worker. He does enough to get by. He's good at what he does. And Orton, you know, Orton's when he's motivated and on, he's as good as anybody. And he was on here, and this was a pretty good match. And then we get all the stuff going on with the Singh brothers, and that takes it up a notch, and the heat's really getting going. And we get the Singhs going after Bob Orton Jr. at the referee toss them out. And then as that happens, Randy goes completely ape shit, and he kills Samil twice. He does the one where he picks him up and just launches him in the air like he did last time, and just went through a table.
Then Tom brought that up on commentary too. He was like, that was almost as, he was like, that was worse than what happened at Backlash.
Yeah. Then Samir ate RKO on the floor. Then Samil got an RKO through the table. So Randy Orton broke the table, and a rare win for Randy Orton in his feud with tables. He broke the table, and then the finish was perfect. You know, this whole thing was going on for at least 5 minutes, maybe. And Jinder's nowhere to be seen. So Orton, gets back in the ring. All of a sudden, here's Jinder. Boom. Kicks him. Drops him. Pin. Jinder wins. Just bam, bam, bam. I loved it. So, very fun match. You know, lots of cool stuff going on outside the ring with the legends and Orton going crazy. So, very solid segments. What do you think about it?
Yeah, I liked the match a good bit. I thought it was really good. I think some people on Twitter brought up some good points, and I agree. It felt like an old style match. Heel, very strong heel versus very strong face. Great heat. Had the moment where the Sting brothers start harassing Bob Orton Jr. On the floor, and then Orton beats up the seconds and then loses. So I liked the match before that. I thought they did a good job of Randy getting in some hope spots, and Jinder did very, really, really confident in ring. He's not excellent, great, but he's very solid and he's very confident in his work. He has great mannerisms. He's starting to understand psychology pretty well when he was working over Randy's leg. I like the spots where he slammed his leg on the table and on the barricade, and I liked when he put in the big four. That was a great spot. I thought Jinder was very good in this match. My biggest mess, I think the finish was a little bit too similar to Backlash. Orton beat up the Sting there and then got hit with the finish and it was over. So I'm critical of the similarities there between the two finishes, but it was still hot and it still had great heat and it was still done very well. And looks like Jinder, I don't know. I could see them doing one more. Because it's a while until Battleground. It's like, what, 5 weeks until Battleground?
Well, our buddies at Wrestle with Words, they tweeted out from their official Twitter account that. And they've been right on some stuff before, well before the news sites had it out there. Whoever tweeted out firmly believes that Orton and Jinder is going to have a Punjabi prison match at Battleground.
Oh wow! That'd be interesting to see. It would be minus Great Khali was.
Yes.
All those infamous Punjabi prison matches. So that's fascinating, and that's a way to keep the Singh brothers out too. So that and that's because I'm thinking there's got to be a third match, right?
Because that and that and the that's Singh the story. Brothers, keep them out. Yep. Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And Randy, a story for Randy for many years is Randy always gets distracted.
Yes.
Well, this won't. You know, this
loses his temper. Loses his temper. Like the Christian in the 2011 cost him his. Cost him his title.
Yeah, so this keeps him inside the prison and keeps him motivated. His eyes on the prize.
Right.
And that, you know, that may be where he gets the bump back from Jinder. Who knows? But yeah, it's I got to think they're building to something. For sure. They're definitely going to do a round three. But, yeah, I thought this was a good segment, no matter what. So, and Jinder, like I said, Jinder's not the best worker in the world, but he does good at what he does, and it seems like he's getting better and more comfortable as a champion.
Yes.
So, we'll see where he goes from here, but fun stuff. All right, our next segment is the buffer segment between the title match and Money in the Bank, and it's the Fashion Vice mystery match, where it was obvious that it was going to be the Ascension, I mean, from the video, but that didn't mean it had to be obvious when they got into the ring. But sure enough, here's the Ascension. And it's like, what a letdown. Because the thought process, and say you've been out of the loop, the thought process on Twitter and other places I've seen is that people thought that this attack angle was going to lead to like an American Alpha heel turn.
Sure.
And because God knows they've done nothing. I mean, they just disappeared. They fall on the face of the earth. So we get this match here. Fandango gets the inside cradle of Victor, wins the match. Completely nothing match. And I think there's so much more could have been done here. So I think it's a missed opportunity. What do you think?
I actually defended the result of the Ascension being the attackers on Twitter because if you remember, in like I think it might have been the second Fashion Files, they walked on the Ascension when they were in the closet growling at each other or whatever the hell they were doing.
Yes, that's true.
I think that was sort of might be me inventing a reason, but I don't.
But didn't they have a match after that though?
I think they did. Yeah. I think they might. That's a good point. So that's sort of my defense of that. I think just a way to get, because Breezango are so, the Fashion Police are so over, whatever you want to call them, that they just wanted them to win, you know, get a win and keep them on TV and keep them strong. They're trying to figure out what they want to do with them, I think, is more than anything. Although they did sort of sacrifice several segments just for them to beat the Ascension in the piss break on the card.
Yeah, so, I think more could have been done because the SmackDown heel tag team side is just shot.
Oh, it's weak. I mean, it's and I guess this is where we could bring up the, you know, their poor rotation of the SmackDown roster. I mean, when's the last time we saw American Alpha? Mid-April?
Jesus, I mean, they're not on TV at all.
Yeah, you know, they didn't even work the Chattanooga House Show, which the SmackDown House Show, that house show. They weren't even on there, you know.
It makes you wonder, is there an injury somewhere or something going on or what?
What's going on? It's weird. You know, Luke Harper and Eric Rowan, they're working the house shows. You know, they were going to do something with Eric Rowan.
Aiden English.
Aiden English got on TV for a few weeks. It's kind of the
Ty Dillinger has been gone. Just disappeared.
Yeah. I mean, it's
and here's the thing. It's a 2-hour show, and yes, we talked about how much we love the Mike Bennett deal, but he's going to be on there now, so yeah, I find room for him. Rusev.
He's coming back.
He's coming back, so you got to make room for him.
John Cena is a free agent.
But he'll be on there.
But he will be on there. You know, what that means is he'll probably work Raw on SmackDown programs, maybe. I don't know.
So, again, it's a 2-hour show. There's only enough time for all this stuff for them. You know, and that's where Raw has been doing better lately, is they've finally got some focus going on, and they're running multiple undercard feuds that's taken up the whole show. There are angles and programs going on throughout the show. All right, you look at Raw right now. Okay, we got all your main programs. You got Roman and whatever he's going to do at SummerSlam. Braun, whenever he comes back. Brock and Joe. Then you got, let's see.
Rollins and Bray.
Yeah, Rollins and Bray.
You've got the Kurt Angle mystery. You've got the Enzo and Cass attack mystery.
Yeah, you got Ambrose, Miz, and Drifter, and a little three way type
deal. Also with the Miz and Maryse problems.
Miz and Maryse haven't dissension in the ranks. You've got Titus Brand going on there with Kalisto. You've got
Goldust R-Truth.
I mean, there's just stuff going on up and down the car on that show. Shit. I mean, you got Hardy's, Sheamus, and Cesaro.
Yep.
So, and all the women. You got Alexa and her deal with Nia Jax, Mickie James, and Dana, and Sasha. You got Bayley and what's going to happen to her. And yeah, there's a lot going on Raw. And then you look at SmackDown, and it's like, what's compelling on the show besides Orton and Jinder and the stuff going on with the women?
Yep.
Which is interesting because this leads up to our main event, the Money in the Bank match, where the men's version, where you got Shinsuke Nakamura, Sami Zayn, AJ Styles, Baron Corbin, Kevin Owens, and Dolph Ziggler. And it just seems like the build to this was just basically like, let's just put these guys in a bunch of matches. Although they were trying to, you know, do different things with Corbin. You know, they've done this deal where Corbin and Kevin Owens are kind of having dissension in the ranks. And Corbin was the one that still went, they had direction. And he's the one that everybody thought was going to win. And he did. But before that, he attacked Nakamura in the entrance way, which I thought was hilarious. And
got great heat.
The fans wanted to see Nakamura, and it got him out of there. And the rest of the guys come out there and just, you know, started doing their stuff. Wasn't really dynamic to begin with, but it picked up big time. Some of the bumps that was taking this match was full on insanity. Apron bumps galore. AJ Styles giving Kevin Owens the attitude adjustment off the ring apron through that ladder.
Good lord.
Just all kinds of the sunset flip powerbomb from Sammy the Dolph, which looked like it hurt like a motherfucker. You know?
Yeah.
And then you had the spot where AJ was trying to get the briefcase. Dolph pulls the ladder away, so AJ's hanging from the briefcase and eventually just jumps down, which that didn't like it felt great either. But all that was going on. Nakamura comes back in 22 minutes into the match. So he had a basically a night off, I guess you could say, compared to the other guys. But the crowd, like I said, they didn't get back into it until Nakamura came back out. And when his music hit, that place like went crazy. And he comes out there and he stops Corbin from getting the briefcase. And eventually set it up where he knew it was going to happen, where him and AJ would have that face-to-face. And then when
they're
did...
somewhere. Oh. I don't know what it's going to be at one of the big four. They're building to that.
I'd hold it to WrestleMania, but I know it's a long way away. But yeah, it's coming. But when they did the stare down, the fans like just went crazy, you know. And it was mentioned on commentary, these two have a history together, and they started doing their stuff against each other, and the fans were eating it up. And then it felt like, you know, one of these two may actually be the ones to win it. They climb in the ladder. Here comes Corbin. Knocks them both off. He gets up the ladder. He takes the briefcase down. He's the Money in the Bank champion. Pretty much everybody thought that he was going to win anyway. He was the betting favorite. But with all that stuff with Styles and Nakamura going on, do you think that Corbin winning was the right decision?
Yeah, I still think it is the right decision because I think that one is I'm a Baron Corbin mark, so I like the guy. But I think there are better things to do with AJ Styles and Nakamura than the briefcase. because
I
I think
agree.
that there's a sort of a bad stigma that's been attached to the briefcase, where you win it, you sort of flounder with the briefcase
Oh,
for a
absolutely.
while.
Yes.
So, and that also can be thrown on to Corbin as well. You know, he very well may flounder, but Corbin is also someone who still needs some work, and he still needs time to get better and get higher up on the card. So this was a win that was big for him. It's a main event on a pay-per-view against big stars, and he won the match clean. And when, I guess you could say he attacked Nakamura, so early in the match. But nonetheless, you know, he won, and I think it was the right choice because, it's a pushing people and landing opportunity gimmick on SmackDown. You know, give him the big win. I think Nakamura and Styles are above the briefcase. They're big stars. Especially AJ within the context of his main roster story. I think he's certainly above the briefcase. And Nakamura, even though he's only been on the roster for a few months, I think his star power exceeds the briefcase as well. I think it's better suited for upper mid-carders rather
it's,
than main
It's for
finish.
Talent that's up and coming and needs it and something like that.
Yes, Baron Corbin needs the briefcase. AJ and Mark don't.
And he can hold it for a while. I mean, there's no rush for Baron Corbin to cash in his briefcase. So they definitely can play a long game with him with this. But what do you think about the match and some of the craziness involved here?
Match was good. I thought it was good. A 30-minute ladder match isn't my cup of tea necessarily as far as length, but I am a mark for ladder matches. So I did think there were parts where I was just kind of watching, but not really interested. It had some pretty brutal spots. Kevin Owens is a lot like a Tommy Dreamer. You know, Owens is a big guy, and I think his body fat allows him to take some of these crazy bumps, kind of like Dreamer. You know what
well,
I mean?
And Owens' defense, he's lost some weight.
Yeah, oh, sure. And I'm not attacking the guy for his
no.
weight. I'm just saying that, Tommy Dreamer said, I think in one of those documentaries, that his body fat allowed him to take all these big bumps. And Owens has been known to take these crazy bumps in these matches. And he's a little more stockier than the other guys, so his body can sustain the impact more than others, I think. So when he takes that sickening half and half on the apron and the freaking attitude adjustment on the dadgum ladder, it's like, good Lord, man. Like,
and that one bump him and Sammy did when they broke the ladder or twisted it early in the match.
This guy can take a beating. I mean, I'm not the biggest Kevin Owens fan, but this guy can take some sick bumps in these ladder matches. Remember, he took that Michinoku Driver last year.
Yeah,
he's
definitely
not
afraid.
Spine.
He's definitely not afraid to throw his body out.
And if I'm not mistaken, didn't he take a body press from Sammy onto the rungs of the ladder
Yeah, sounds right.
Earlier,
yeah.
Top rope, that was brutal too. Like, yeah, he was the master bumper in this one. But AJ, the spot where he was crawling up, hanging on from the briefcase, was crazy. It looked like he bumped on his arm, which is a scary bump to take from that height, because you could have easily broken he could have easily broken from that bump, the way he landed. I did like the Nakamura attack pre-match, and then he got the pop when he came back, and the AJ Nakamura segment was awesome in the match. I love the spot where he went for the Kinshasa, I believe, and AJ hit the forearm. That was a great spot. And they did big time teases down the stretch. I do have to laugh because one of my criticisms of Nakamura and many others is that he phones it in and takes nights off. So I think it's hilarious that he got attacked pre-match and only had to work 10 minutes out of 30.
Yeah. Crazy how that happens, huh?
But he seemed to be working harder when he came in, to be fair to him.
But yeah, he, this was probably the best he's looked
since maybe, the, since maybe his debut, or maybe the best of the well, maybe January with the
yes.
Rude match.
Yeah, so since the Rude match, yes.
So yeah, he, you know, he's so that was it was a good match. Corbin winning was the right decision. I thought it was a good finish, made him look strong to take out AJ and Nakamura at the end. So yeah, good match.
But the thing is, I'm kind of tired of seeing these six guys against each other right now. And yeah. It's like, what do you do?
Yep.
What do you do now? And I mean, you've already put Mojo into a tag team with Zach again. You already got your other feuds lined up, so it's just like these six are going to be married to each other for a little bit longer. I guess Owens and Nakamura are still going to do something, maybe for the U.S. title. I don't know. It's Dolph Ziggler, who wants to see him with anybody? You know, so it's like, will Rusev come back? Who knows? Maybe do Rusev and Styles or something like that. Or Rusev and Sami Zayn. And Mike Bennett, maybe he'll get involved with these guys.
Could be.
You know, AJ and Mike Bennett would be an interesting feud to start off with, but Mike Bennett can't be jobbing, so you got to be careful in how you do that. But I don't know. This was, you know, a strong Money in the Bank match. It had a little bit of everything in it, so yeah, I thought it worked. For sure. So we'll see what happens down the line. Excuse me. Thoughts on the show? Thumbs up, thumbs down, thumbs in the middle. Where you stand?
I'm going to go thumbs in the middle. I thought there was some, you know, the finishes weren't all that great for most of the show. And I think that there was no match that I thought blew me away or that I thought was really, really great. So I have to give it in the middle, but I don't think it was a terrible show. I do think it might have been the worst pay-per-view of 2017 WWE, actually. Although Elimination Chamber wasn't great either, although the main event of that show was great. But it had some solid matches, and it had a few, you know, a few of the matches the right person win. And I thought the crowd was hot for most of the night. The St. Louis crowd was really hot. When they got hot, they were really hot. So there was some pretty good heat in a few of the matches. So thumbs in the middle.
Yeah, I'm going to agree. I think the second half of the show really saved it and almost got it to a slight thumbs up, but I'm going to go thumbs in the middle because it just seems like, I don't know, SmackDown seems like they're running in place at the moment and some things. So, and this show continued it. So, we'll see what happens, you know, down the line with Bryan coming back and leading the Battleground next month and where they go from there. But, yeah, I think that us paying $9.99 for the month, where we get these shows, it changes our outlook. Because if I would pay $60 for this show,
be pissed.
I pissed maybe too strong.
Sure,
I would say
frustrated.
Kinda, yeah. I'd be like, eh. I would have been irked, you know, as for some of the decisions made for the show. But again, $9.99, like, what the hell, you know? It's you know, it's just a fun watch and this, that, and the other. So you know, it is what it is. But they're lucky, I guess, you know. And they've had a pretty good run, you know, of pretty decent pay-per-views this year.
Yeah.
So, yeah, this one might be one of the lower two of the year so far. And even with that, you know, you look at this show, You had a fairly strong main event. You had a good world title match. There was some good stuff on the show, but I don't know. I think the story of this show in the end is more about what didn't happen in the ring than what happened in the ring. A lot of ways,
right?
Whether it be the debut of Mike Bennett and Maria, or the booking issues on this show. So we'll see where they go from there on Tuesday SmackDown. So we got Great Balls of Fire coming up, which they promoted heavily tonight. That comes up on, 3 weeks?
Yeah, something like that, July 9th. They've done a great job, great, great, great build to the Joe Brock match, fantastic build. And I wasn't, and I'm not as big of a fan of Joe anymore, but I think the build's been fantastic, so I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, I thought Joe was the perfect opponent for Brock. If, we would have had that show for the last pay-per-view they did. I thought that was the perfect finish because it makes the most sense. It's fresh and new, and people really want to see that match. And the YouTube views have told the story. I mean, they've done well over 5 million hits for the video on their YouTube channel. That's amazing. So, and the angle's been real good, so we'll see how that goes. And, of course, you got Roman on Raw Monday night. And what do you think his big announcement's going to be? Do you think he's going to challenge John Cena, or what? Ooh.
Well, my initial thought was that it was good because they got the Cena as a free agent now, so Roman will challenge him. I think it's still a chance. I know that there have been rumors that that's not the case. There have been rumors that he's going to challenge. There's been rumors that he's going to announce and Braun's going to come back and beat his ass, and they'll continue that. I think it's going to be one of those three. I don't know which one. But my hope was that it's, it could be something entirely too. My hope is that, Ron comes back and beats him up and we get some, finality to that feud and let that be and make Great Balls a, big time summer. I mean, I know there's SummerSlam, but you could really make Great Balls of Fire a big time show and put that as the other main event and get eyes on Great Balls of Fire.
Yeah, I mean that very easily could happen, but we got that, and I think Seth Rollins has some announcement on ESPN in on Monday morning too, which I don't know what that's going to be about. So it must be big enough. I mean, he's going to be on SportsCenter on a Monday morning to have a discuss an announcement. So something's going on.
Yep.
We'll see how that plays out. But some interesting things in WWE going on right now for sure. Mae Young Classic coming up. So yeah, summer's going to get interesting, folks. That's for sure. All right, that's it for us tonight. Devin, thanks as always for being on the show.
Absolutely.
This is Chris saying so long from the Peach State of Georgia.